Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. This week marks 45 years since the Supreme Court issued its ruling in the landmark abortion case Roe v. Wade, 1973. Last Friday, we heard from Professor Michelle Obermann, who uses her research on abortion bans in places like Chile and El Salvador to challenge people on both sides of the abortion debate here in the United States and to imagine a real world where abortion is illegal.
The abortion tribalism that we're living in, where our focus on legality is really the be-all and end-all, is astonishingly naive. We need to start asking ourselves what we think will happen if abortion is illegal. And both sides need to be having that conversation because it matters. I mean, it's naive to take a political election and have it turn on who announces that they're going to make abortion illegal without asking, and then what?
Well, in 2010, writer Lainey Zumas asked herself a similar question, which ultimately led her to write the new novel, Red Clocks.
In 2010, when I started writing Red Clocks, I was also dealing with infertility in my own life. And I started researching IVF, in vitro fertilization, which is something I eventually did. And I now have a five-year-old son who was conceived using IVF. And in my research, I came upon this thing called the personhood amendment or the personhood movement, which I hadn't really heard about before. And it started making me feel really angry, really scared, this idea that a vocal small minority of people in our country wanted to give a single-celled zygote rights of life, liberty, and property. So I started to imagine, how would it feel if the scientific technology that enabled me to have my little boy were suddenly illegal? And on the flip side of that coin, of course, you know, across the funhouse mirror from that question was, how would it feel if abortion were illegal again?
And in terms of in vitro fertilization, the personhood law in your book means that an embryo is a person and therefore can't consent to being frozen or put
yes.
in a test tube or being moved, essentially.
Exactly. That would infringe upon its rights to sort of be where it wanted to be, I suppose.
And what's the upshot of that for you or for the characters in your book?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think fiction can do is allow us to really immerse ourselves in imagining the lived consequences of a law, right? So that you can look at something like the Personhood Amendment or the overturning of Roe v. Wade in political terms or abstract terms, but what does it feel like to be a 15-year-old girl who has been impregnated by a classmate she barely knows, facing the choice of becoming a criminal or going forward with a pregnancy that she doesn't want? How does that feel on a daily basis? You know, what is the ordinary kind of human experience of that pressure? And so in charting the lives of the five women in this book, each of them has different kinds of pressures upon her, not just her body, but her mind, her emotional landscape. And that was what was compelling to me, is to imagine what it feels like to live under this law.
You're within the personal lives of your characters in this book, but also sort of in the political life of an America where abortion is illegal, Lainey. And America is talking a lot about walls right now, the wall
yeah.
President Trump wants to build between the United States and Mexico. Your book has a wall, but it's not a physical barrier as much as an ideological one, and it's with Canada.
Yes, it's the Pink Wall, and it stems from an agreement the Canadian government has made with the U.S. government that any woman who wants to go into Canada to seek either an abortion or advanced fertility treatment will not only be turned back, but she can be arrested and sent back for prosecution in the States.
President Trump made a comment during the campaign, I think on MSNBC, talking to Chris Matthews, that gave a lot of pause to a lot of people in the abortion debate.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no? As a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents, 10 years,
I don't
what?
Know. That I don't know. That
well, why
I don't
not?
Know. I don't know.
Lainey Zumas, the future president of the United States, saying there has to be some punishment for the woman. Now, he later revised that comment, but still it sent immediate shockwaves through American culture. Even anti-abortion rights activists hesitated to support that remark. What was your reaction?
Aside from horror and rage, I think that it's interesting that not only did Trump say that, but there was a poll taken soon after his election that showed almost 40% of his supporters thought women seeking abortion should be punished. And again, it could be a chicken or egg question. Is he saying it because his supporters say it or vice versa? But the fact is that he's not the only politician who has said something like that. You know, there's a guy in the Idaho Senate, a Republican named Dan Foreman, who actually proposed a bill that would put women who have abortions on trial for first-degree murder. And again, the laws in my book, are in Red Clocks, around punishing women, punishing their bodies, punishing their selves, they really stem from what things that actual politicians have said, especially since 2008, which is when I think the personhood movement emerged as a more kind of vocal and militant sort of grassroots movement in our country. There are politicians currently in office who do think that women should be punished in this way. And the interesting thing to me is that women are already punished in all sorts of ways for having to deal with an unwanted pregnancy, whereas the other half of that unwanted pregnancy, the man who impregnated the woman, does not get punished in the same way at all.
Having imagined this world where embryos are persons and abortion is illegal, what is the effect, the spiritual effect, on the women in your story when they lose this measure of control?
The spiritual effect of being told, we think so little of your life that we are going to force you to do something you don't want to do so that this group of cells that could one day become an individual person can keep on growing. I think it's devastating.
Lainey Zumas is the author of the new novel, Red Clocks. Lainey Zumas, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Todd.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.